Today on Tips from the Top Floor, I have a call for help for you Kiwis out there, and Hugh wonders if the very special film that he exposed 20 years ago and never developed is still good to take to a lab to see what's on it. This is Tips from the Top Floor, episode 843 for October the 4th, 2018. Tips from the top floor, tips from the top, all right. Hey and welcome. It is, what is it? October 2018, episode 843. And, let's see. Oh yeah, last episode I announced the Wide Angle webinar that took place on the 3rd, as in yesterday, the day before I record this. And it went well. It was about challenges when shooting wide angle and what to do about them. And thanks all of you who showed up. There was a total of, I think, almost 300 people watching live, which is awesome. It's really awesome. And there's usually more people replaying it, going to the replay link. So if you RSVP'd, your replay link should already be in your inbox. And I talked to Rocky Nook, by the way, my publisher, who organized this whole thing. They will also put this video on YouTube. And as soon as I have the link, I will share it here with you. So you can watch that too. It's not too long. It's under an hour. And I try to touch on the five most important things when shooting wide angle, which is, the first is too much stuff in the frame, right? Too much clutter. It's easy when you shoot wide angle because, more angle, more stuff. The second one is about contrast being too high, and that happens, again, with the wider angle. There's just more stuff in the photo, and real estate photographers know that. They have the problem with they have to shoot wide angle often to show more in the frame, but then, of course, they run into windows and high contrast, high dynamic range in the scene. And we talked about how to tackle that one. Another one is edge distortion. Like if you put someone's head at the edge of a wide angle frame, that head will turn egg-shaped. And there are ways to use this for effect. And there are, of course, like best practices to kind of avoid these kind of things. There's also a bit of a secret move with a shift lens, if you have one, where you can put a person right at the edge of the frame without them being distorted at all. And number four was the fact that a wide-angle lens has more depth of field than a telephoto lens. And that makes it harder to tidy up your compositions because with a longer focal length, you will often just blur the background, and then what's in the background isn't that important. But if you shoot wide-angle, you cannot blur the background that easily. So it means you'll have to be more tidy in your compositions. And that is certainly something to watch out for. And then last but not least, the fifth point I touched on was vertical lines that tend to go all weird and falling if you tilt the camera, which, again, it's something you sometimes just can't avoid. And the wider angle, the stronger this effect gets. And we talked about what to do about that. And again, there are several ways to fix this in post or to not let this creep into the photo in the first place. So yeah, a webinar on wide angle photography and the challenges. And this is all from the Wide Angle book. So if you've read that, you already know these things. If not, that's just a taste of what the kind of things are in the book that might be helpful. So anyway, YouTube link is about to come out soon. Here's a call for help. Podcaster in peril. Not really, but and by the way, this goes out specifically to the Kiwis among you, because and I talked about this in previous episodes, that Monica and I are planning to spend some time in New Zealand early next year, in January and in parts of February. And a while ago, I asked you, the Kiwis, for hints and tips, and the great responses, awesome stuff. But there are a couple of things that I didn't ask for, and I I'm asking them here now. Okay, so first one might be a relatively simple one. Of course, we need to get around, right? We want to start in the North Island and then make our way down to the South Island and probably spend the majority of time down there. But that's at least a recommendation that we received. Nothing against the North Island, but hey, whatever. We need transportation. So, of course, this is going to be a car rental. That's the plan for now. We don't have specific flight plans just yet, but probably we'll pick it up in Auckland in, again, early January, and then return it in, yeah, possibly Christchurch a couple of weeks into February. Now, renting a car for like 5 or 6 weeks is not cheap, especially if you return it at a different location than you picked it up. So I was just wondering if any one of you had a good idea in that regard, other than what I already found on Google so far. Do you have any connections? Do you know anyone? So here's me calling on all Kiwis. Let me know if you have a good idea. And yes, I've already Googled this quite extensively. So, anyway, same, by the way, goes for accommodations. We're putting together a plan of where to stay and so on. But do you have any tips there? Any special, I don't know, Airbnbs or something that you can recommend? Any other great places to stay? That's an area of interest. Also, of course, I have already talked about this earlier. I was thinking of maybe doing a little photo workshop while in New Zealand. Now, the time to organize this is short, especially as I'll travel. Like starting right now, I'll be in Morocco and then in the States. That'll go into early November. So I don't have much time to organize something. So, first of all, word of warning, if I manage to get something off the ground, it'll probably be more casual than usual. But I won't be able to pull off that workshop myself. I mean, in general, that's the case when you go somewhere to do that. I'll need local help. And for that, I have two main questions. First of all, where? And the two places that come to mind are Wellington or Christchurch. And of course, I know if I ask a question like this, the response is almost always the same. People will write and say that they want it to be where they live because that's much easier to get to and so on. So that's not what I'm asking for. If you write me an email about this to tell me that it should be in a specific location, all I ask is that you tell me why this would be a great location for a workshop other than you living there. It's just, yeah, it's experience. I've had this so many times. And second, and maybe even more important, do you have a place, like a place that a group could stay at, a location, a venue of some sort, or maybe connections to one where we could hold that workshop? And I don't expect this to be a huge event, to be honest. I'd be happy if there are 10 people. So we would need a space that's big enough to do this workshop. Let's add some buffer. Maybe let's say it should be able to hold maybe 15 people. And in any of the locations I brought up earlier, Wellington or Christchurch. And again, I mean, convince me why this should be in one over the other location. I'm, of course, thinking of interesting environments like great landscapes, but also at very practical things. Would New Zealanders be willing to travel for this? Would it be more likely for people to travel to Christchurch than to Wellington? I mean, I don't really know. I've not been there before. And this would most likely be like a 1 or 2 day workshop, probably 2 days. So people would, of course, need accommodation. Would accommodation be affordable in that respective place? You know, lots of like tiny little things to think about. Also, in my poll from a couple of months ago, I asked what kind of workshop you guys would be interested in. And of course, nearly all of you chose landscape photography. Yeah, kind of a given in New Zealand, I guess. And also high on the list was composition and post-processing. So we would need, the place would need to allow people like to sit and to use their laptops. And it should also be like in relatively close proximity to to great landscapes to photograph, so we don't have to spend too much time on the road. Wouldn't be feasible to drive for 3 hours one way. Should be as close as possible. Also, we need to organize transportation for the group. Or, I mean, of course, if the group is small enough, we could car share. But, you know, lots of things. And so on and so on. Lots of details and not a lot of time to plan, especially as I won't really be able to really sink any time into this until early November. But still, I mean, if you are in favor of one of the locations, if you're in favor of one of the locations for any other reason than you living there, let me know. Send me an email. And if you can help, if you have experience organizing something locally, the willingness to help is great, but you also have to be kind of reliable. I had some interesting experiences in the past. But by all means, let me know if you know how to organize an event. Again, it's not a big one, but we have to think about a whole bunch of things. I'll just depend on someone local to help me to organize this on the ground. So let me know. Are you interested? Can you help? Do you have experience? Email me, chris@chrismarquardt.com. chris@chrismarquardt.com. Oh, and one more thing. While I'm there, I will also need a SIM card, like with lots of data. I depend on that. A minimum of 5 gigabytes, probably like 10 or more. I don't even know the prices. I haven't had time to research that. Is that something you just get at the airport? Is it something you have to pre-buy? Again, let me know if you have experience getting a data SIM card for New Zealand. Email chris@chrismarquardt.com. chris@chrismarquardt. Thanks all so much. Let me take a minute and thank Nations Photo Lab for supporting this episode. Your photos don't belong on your phone. Create something memorable with a Buzz Book, the new softcover photo book by Nations Photo Lab. Nations Photo Lab is built by photographers for photographers to turn your images into memorable works of art. Create your first Buzz Book for free by heading to nationsphotolab.com/buzzbooks and using the code TOPFLOOR. Capture your trip to Tulum, your best friend's wedding, or any other everyday moment in one book. Each BuzzBook is printed on professional quality Mohawk matte paper with a cover that is soft to the touch. Choose from one of their professionally designed covers or create your own and fill the pages with 40 of your favorite photos. With BuzzBooks, it's that easy to relive all of your favorite moments. Whether you're shopping for your grandparents, parents, besties, or yourself, BuzzBooks are a gift that definitely won't be regifted. Make every moment matter. Head to nationsphotolab.com/buzzbooks and use code TOPFLOOR for your free BuzzBook. That's nationsphotolab.com/buzzbooks and code TOPFLOOR.
Hello, Chris. This is Hugh from cloudy Portland, Oregon. I've been a listener for several years now, and I always enjoy listening to your podcast and hearing the great wisdom you have and balanced perspective you provide. I'm calling because I recently listened to episode 838, where you talked about using old film. I have two sets of questions about using old film, actually coming at this from the other end. I have some old film that I exposed some 20 plus years ago, but never got developed, partly due to money at the time and partly due to procrastination on my part and some other factors. The film has been stored in double sealed plastic containers and kept either in the freezer or the refrigerator. I don't see any signs of moisture growing on it or anything like that. My thought was that keeping it chilled would keep the chemical processes from continuing as fast and might give me more time before any decay going through. I have no idea what's on the photos, probably some landscape, sunsets, general people pictures, I don't know. Do you think it might be worth trying to get that film developed or not? I just don't know, to be honest, and would rather, you know, save the money if it's just absolutely going to be completely worthless. So
All right, let me stop you right there. Thanks for the question. Old film depends on several things. Well, first of all, what type of film is it? Because black and white ages slower than color film. But in general, the clock kind of begins ticking after exposure. So you either want to get it developed quickly, or what you've done is also generally a good idea if you can't get it developed soon, to keep it in a cool place. So my answer is still, hey, those are 20 plus years ago. They might not be technically perfect. They might have grain noise, whatever that is exaggerated. But a film is quite flexible, so I'm pretty sure there is something on it. So I would definitely go and have those developed. Try it, go for it. Now, I'm not sure if you said anything about how many rolls it is. Maybe if you have multiple rolls of that film, that's what it sounds like. Develop one and see what comes out and make a decision based on that. All right, second question.
All right, my second question is, most of this film is from Seattle Filmworks. They were a company that they would take 35 millimeter motion picture film and put it into standard camera cartridges and sell it. And then when you returned it back to them, they would then give to you prints, a color negative, and a color slide as well. One of the reasons I haven't developed this is that the Seattle Filmworks and the other company I was using to develop them have kind of gone out of business. I don't know who would be reputable anymore for trying these. Do you know of anybody? Was there anything I should look at for online companies in terms of who might be able to handle this film type? Because it's not a standard color film. I know I've the local shops back when I was doing this more actively, they would look at it and say, we can't touch that because it's not a standard color film process. Also, do you know, is there any ideas of things I should tell the developing company when I explain to them what's going on with this, what to expect? Thank you very much. And I look forward to hearing from you.
All right. Now, this is a tough nut to crack, because initially, during your first question, I was thinking, okay, maybe black and white film, which is kind of like, you can't really mishandle black and white, or it's C41, which is color negative film, which is kind of the most common color film. And I think it sounds like a few of those rolls are C41, and those, yeah, bring them to some drugstore, CVS, Walgreens, and so on. They develop film, they send it off to a lab, but yeah, that should be fairly easy for them to develop and not too expensive. But of course, Seattle Filmworks, I had to look that up. Yeah, that is not normal film. And yes, they won't touch it because it is a process that isn't that common anymore. It's a chemical process called ECN2. That's just the way this film is designed and what cameras it uses. And it is, C41 is kind of the standard now, right? So everyone can do C41. You can still get it developed anywhere in the world. ECN2, not as much. In addition to that, yeah, you said it's a motion picture film. And they take that, which, by the way, you can buy these days under the brand Cinestill. Still on the market. So what happens is the motion picture film is kind of like normal negative film. Apart from the process, it's negative film, but it has one addition that you don't see in regular still photography film, and that is something called Remjet. REMJET is a stabilizing kind of a carbon backing on the not light facing side of the film. I believe it's for stability, so mechanical stability. And yeah, it's a black carbon backing. It must be removed, washed off for during the processing, and that is, again, it's a special process. Not many will do that. Now, I have Googled. I don't have any first-hand experience here, but I have Googled, which everyone should be able to do. There is a place called thecamerashop.com, and they offer Seattle Filmworks 35 millimeter processing. So they apparently can still do that. They have a phone number on the website. Give them a call. Tell them exactly what you just told us here, how old the film is, when it was exposed, and how many roles, and let them tell you what it takes to get this developed. I would, again, just have one role developed, see how it goes, and maybe judge from that if it's worth going any further. All right, that was it for this episode of Tips from the Top Floor. Hugh, I will put some links to the Seattle PhotoWorks film processing thing in the show notes, so check those out. You should find something there. Thanks again for all the sponsorship and all the support for this episode. This is just awesome. Not just the sponsors, but also you guys. Give TFTTF a rating on iTunes. That's probably the best thing you can do to support the show. That helps the visibility, and visibility is everything these days. Music for the show by Jeff Smith, Silent Partner, Hans-Peter Kagrud Publishing, and Slack Challenges by Release Pixie, Matt Rassiter Armstead, and Slack Invitations. As usual, handled by Chief Invitation Officer, CIO, Rusty Russ. If you want to get on the Slack, the link is in the show notes. I remember that I told you there'd be sunshine after rain. My name is Chris Marquardt. You'll find me on social media, including Mastodon, at Chris, M-A-R-Q-U-A-R-D-T. Now go out, take amazing photos, be nice to each other, and happy shooting.